inside beautiful Clark Hall. We're in the Clark Hall Conference Room. I suspect this is what the name of it is. Clark Hall Conference Room. Rich Robinson here with Danielle Burney, sitting as well with Dean Robert Olin, who's the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. You've been in this position since the year 2000, so you've had 14 years under your belt here. Before that, you worked at Virginia Tech for 25 years as a faculty member there. You're a mathematician, if I'm not mistaken, so you're a math guy from way back.
I'm a math guy, I am.
But now you're in charge of an organization that has an $80 million budget, almost roughly 9,000 students are in the Arts and Sciences College. So coming from being a math faculty member to now having to run a massive interdisciplinary, you know, college, what has been the biggest lesson that you've learned in the last 14 years?
What's the biggest lesson?
Yeah, synthesize 14 years in 2 minutes for me.
The biggest lesson I've learned is really to listen carefully to whatever the constituency is that I'm addressing. You're right, arts and sciences is like being the captain of the aircraft carrier that's a huge flagship. Lots of parts to it and running. But it was a matter of scaling up to become the Dean of Arts and Sciences. When I left Virginia Tech, I was chair of that department, and there were over 100 faculty in the math department at that time. So it wasn't coming out of a small department. So I got the experience of dealing with staff and faculty at that stage. The biggest difference, though, was we were homogeneous in the sense we were all mathematicians, and now I go from dancers to nuclear physics to...
Right.
When I get tired of one discipline, it's real easy to... I don't like the sciences today. I want to go over and do Shakespeare. That's the fun part of my job.
So with all of that, I never realized, you know, when I was speaking... To Ms. Florence, who obviously helps you as well run this large college, I never really realized how much autonomy that you kind of have as a dean. I mean, you do have a large budget, and obviously you're in constant communication with the provost and with the president and other executive staff folk. But you have a lot of autonomy. And so you can kind of have an agenda of somewhat anyway, where you want to kind of have a plan and you come out and execute it. When you first got here, what was your biggest goal? Or did you just kind of want to do a good job? Did you have an agenda when you first came on campus?
Yes, I did. There were three or four major items that were on my agenda. If I dealt with the faculty, was to help this institution move towards being a research one institution. So it helped the research and scholarship and creative activity of the faculty. And so that's a big agenda in itself, and how, when you have 24 departments, and how you develop a scheme to have that happen. And then with student learning, one of the things that I think was my biggest attraction to come for Alabama to come here was I was a big advocate of technology and how technology helps student learning. So it was how to infuse that into the curriculum and help the institution. Because modestly I say I was known as a national leader with the math lab and how that... In so doing that, though, in my experience, I became much of an expert in assessment of student learning at that time, because I was always having to prove that what I said worked, really I could put it on the table.
Right.
So it was to help with really coming down on how you measure student learning. And then...
Because most people wouldn't realize, I mean, this is in your background, but the math lab, the math TLC, didn't exist before you came.
Very small version started right before I came, into what is now what's in the top wall.
To the chagrin of many people like me who the MTLC is not a positive place because of our poor math skills. But yes, when you look at the progression of education now, it's obviously much more online based, using kind of those sort of tools. You look at like Khan Academy, for example, which is online, pretty much a supplement, if you will, for some curriculum. When you see all this, the MTLC was kind of a forerunner on a lot of this stuff. I mean, it uses computer software to effectively, you know, supplement learning. And for certain classes, I mean, it is effectively you are learning by yourself, or at least it is your pace that is kind of determined. Why was that such a priority for you back in 2000?
Well, all across the country, there's a lot of students that have difficulty with their mathematical experiences. And one of the issues that, having taught mathematics for 25 years before, pure and simple, is students that really are diligent about doing their homework when they're supposed to and trying and staying up with it, they do succeed. And so it's really like golf or football or something. You can be coached in it, but you don't learn to be a good golfer unless you go out and smack the ball constantly. You don't become a good pianist unless you practice your piano 4 or 5 hours. And the same thing with mathematics. You can watch Bob Olin do mathematics all the time and say, wow, I can. That doesn't mean you can do it. So by having the experience delivered by machines, a student can't go on to the next page until they do something. And so pure and simple, it's just that you have to do it. And so that's the reason for doing it by technology. But it's not, math lab, I would disagree, is like the Khan lab, because it is so rich in other, if you're stuck, you can put a cup up on the machine, you can raise your hand, and Bob Olin will come over and sit down with you and work one-on-one with you, try to help you figure out, versus standing in front of 35 people and trying to explain to you at that time.
So do you think that lecture in math anyway, in sciences, is a thing of the past, or very soon will be a thing of the past?
No. It will stay ingrained again. It goes back to Socrates. It's the experience of the lecture style that goes on. So that will be, it's been around for a couple thousand years, it'll be around for a couple thousand more. But it's the experience of the lecture. Are you participatory? Is it a shared experience and not just dictated? Is it a sage on stage kind of thing? That's not a good lecture.
Well, one last question on mathematics while we've gotten on this subject, I guess. Obviously, you look at the PISA scores around the world, and obviously PISA is for our audience, an international test basically by the OECD countries, and they are able to gauge test scores and standard. It's a standardization of scores across the country, across the world. United States on math is very poor when it comes to other OECD countries, especially with younger children as they come in to the college system. Is there something, because I would imagine half of what your math department has to do is remediate people, try to remediate the learning effectively, remedial learning, trying to just get people up to par. And then they get to math 100 or whatever it is, and then a lot of people have to get to 110, and then they're done. So do you feel that half of what your department has to do is just get people back to a college level before they can actually even start to look at a college curriculum?
I would say, I won't quantify it, but when I first arrived, there was a lot more remediation done than what is being done right now. Over the time, the quality of the students that have come to Alabama, their preparation has increased dramatically. And that can be measured by just looking at enrollments into the what you call remedial classes versus the calculus classes. So the demand has shifted.
But you wouldn't call those remedial classes. You would just say that, you know, That's the reality.